I want to start in 1 John chapter 2, verse 19. The message is going to come from Ruth chapter 1. But I want to begin in 1 John 2:19. The reason that I want to begin there, I don't know of anything church-wise that concerns me any more than this thought. It's something that weighs on my mind almost every day. I think about the people in the last 47 years that have made their way through the doors of this church, whether it be here or in Stone Mountain. And I think about those that came in, I mean, they were just guns a-blazing. But a short time later, they were nowhere to be found. I told Brother Don one time years ago, I said, "Preacher, if we kept everybody that came through here, we'd be running 3,000 people." He said, "I know." And we've talked about it over the years. Of course, you know, I don't get to have that conversation really anymore. But I remember those times in which we did have those conversations. But it's not exclusive for our church. It happens in most churches. There are people that have come in and they've named the name of Christ, but yet there's nothing that holds them into that commitment. I know that I've heard Billy Graham's quote, and I've heard W.A. Criswell's quote, that truly they believe that at least 50% of the memberships in most Baptist churches are, according to Billy Graham, it was evangelical churches, but Criswell with the First Baptist of Dallas when he pastored, he said, "I really believe that 50% of our membership is lost." That's sad. I look at the names that I've looked at for 4 decades plus now, and they're members, but they never darken the doors of the church. I think there's a problem with that kind of salvation. I want you to look at this verse. "They went out from us, but they were not of us. For if they had been of us, they would no doubt have continued with us." In other words, the mark of a genuine commitment is that you follow through on what you have decided. "They would have no doubt continued with us, but they went out that they might be made manifest," they might be made known, "that they were not all of us." Dr. Hudson used to say that you can't tell how much gas is in the tank by the toot of the horn. And that's true. I've known of people that have come in like a whirlwind, and you would think that they were going to set the world on fire. I remember, this has been years ago, we had a young man that came in. His name was Jeff. I won't call his last name, even though I know it. I hadn't forgotten that name. Jeff came in. He was about 17 years old. First day he came in, he had a suit and tie on, and he was supposedly called to preach. And I say supposedly called to preach, because I mean, I doubt he was called to preach. I mean, I really doubt he was called to preach. He came in, and everybody was just, "Look at that young man. Here he is. He's 16, 17 years old. He's got a coat and tie on. Man, he must love God." And he clicked along there for about, I don't know, 6 months. And then I noticed that he was not around. He kind of quit coming. And then I heard that he was dating a young lady. She was kind of and I don't mean this ugly, but she was kind of simple. And she worked at Walmart. We've had a couple of situations like this, and I don't know why, but Walmart's involved in both of them. But she worked at Walmart, and they offered her a chance to buy stock, and she did. And she got, I don't know, $3,000 or $4,000 in some type of little retirement thing, and she was only about 20. She had a little old used car that was paid for, and she had a trailer that was almost paid for. And he ended up kind of sparking with her a little bit. And then he said, let's get married. Well, she's all for that because she's wanting to be married. That's biology. And so they got married. And in less than 6 months, the trailer was hocked. And they were about to lose it. The car was gone. The little bit of money that she had in those stocks for Walmart was gone, and he was gone. He hoodooed his grandfather by marriage, lied straight up to his grandmother, and then did that girl that way. And as far as I know, he may be in jail, and he ought to be. Do I believe that boy was saved? No, I don't. I do not. You say, well, have you turned into a fruit inspector? No, I'm not. And he might be saved. But I also know what Hebrews says, that if we are living in sin and we're a Christian, there's a chastisement that comes along with that. And to use the Bible word, if you don't receive chastisement, you're a bastard. That's a Bible word. And so they went out from us, but they were not of us. Keep that in mind. Now, we're going to come back to 1 John at the end of the message tonight, but I want you to go with me to Ruth chapter 1. The title of the message tonight is Oprah's Kiss. And actually, if you're going to pronounce her name right, it's Orpha. All right? Orpha's Kiss. I've led people to Christ, and some of those have been solid since, and some of them I haven't seen since. And I read the story of a preacher, and there was a guy mocking the preacher, and he said, hey, preach, I saw one of your converts down at the bar last night where I was at. And he said to the man, well, that's about right. I guess he was my convert and not the Lord's. And sometimes we can talk people into saying a few words, but if their lives are not changed, they're still lost. And so I want us to look at this story. It's a very familiar passage. The book of Ruth is one of the most beloved books in the Bible. It happened during the time of the judges, and on the timeline that on our chronological Bible reading, I was looking at that this afternoon, and it will fit chronologically between Judges and Samuel, which is exactly where it's at in the Old Testament. But if you really want to get more precise, now you remember that certain parts of things happened in different parts of Israel, and this has probably happened during the time of Gideon. You've got Gideon that is in one part of Israel, and here you've got the story of Ruth, and they come from the land of the Moabites back into Bethlehem, which is where Naomi was from. And so it's about the time of Gideon. If you want to know when it was written, it was probably not written during their time. It was probably written sometime around the time of 1000 BC. Which would be a couple of hundred years in the future. David could have possibly written it because that's the time in which he lived. And so it says, now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled. Therefore, that dates it. The judges that you have in your Bible, it's the same time. The judges are ruling. What was significant about that time? Every man did that which was right in their own eyes. That's not a good time to live. Right? Libertarianism sounds great, but it doesn't lead to great places. And I've got a lot of libertarianism in me. But there's some things that are a bridge too far. And so it was a time when judges ruled, and there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. And the name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife, Naomi, and the name of his two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem, and they came into the country of Moab and continued there. And Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died. And she was left and her two sons. Now, this is a hard time. You need to remember this. In biblical times, ladies that were widows had it tough. There was no such thing as a social net that caught anybody. If you didn't have family that could take care of you, you pretty much starved to death. That's pretty much the story that would have been here. But Naomi, in her mind, she's thinking, well, I'm okay. I've got two sons. My boys will take care of me. And so she's left and her two sons. Well, they take them wives of the women of Moab. So some time has passed. These boys get to be marrying age. Now, if you look at the names of these guys, they're named, and their names mean that they were sickly, piney, all right? There's some people that they're just not healthy. They seem to always have an issue. When I think of somebody like that, I think of David Brainerd. David Brainerd is probably, he may be the most inspiring missionary ever. I mean, when you read about Brainerd, I mean, the greats followed Brainerd. People like William Carey and Adoniram Judson, all of those guys, where did they get their motivation? They got it from David Brainerd. But David Brainerd died when he was 29 years old. And from the time that he was a little boy, he was sickly. He was a piney type kid, all right? He died with tuberculosis, most likely. And it was a time when they didn't have, vaccinations for anything. And Jerusalem, the girl that was the daughter of Jonathan Edwards, he died in Edwards' home, and she said, I'll take care of him. 3 months after he died, she died of the same thing. And so sometimes the Lord just has people, and they're sick. We've got some people in this church, and I've known of them having maladies for 4 decades. When I think about them and I think about what Deb's gone through, I'm thinking, well, I mean, we got 34 years to go. That's what I'm thinking. And I'm thinking that this year is going to be a great year. I mean, she's doing better now. But some of these folks that I've known, they've been sick a long time. I mean, they're like that Bible or lady in the Bible that says, been to the doctors and spent all and was none to better. That's the way that evidently these boys were. But they were healthy enough to get married. And so they married one girl named Orpha, and then the other was named Ruth. Now, there's some rabbinical sources that believe that these two girls are sisters. I don't think there's anything in the text here that would insinuate that, but there's some in Jewish sources that believe that they were sisters. And they dwelled, or they lived there, about 10 years. But then something happens in verse 5. And Mahlon and Chilion died also, both of them. So now you don't just have one lady, Naomi, that's a widow. Now you've got two young girls. When I say young girls, I'm guessing these girls are probably 20. That would be my best guess. They're about 20 years old. And now they are widows, three widows. They're all together. What are they going to do? I mean, at a time when your security was contingent upon really a man or children that were young men. And so you see that they died. The woman is left. The girls are left. Verse number 6, then she arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the country of Moab. What does it mean, from Moab? Well, if we're to go back to the beginning of where we began, you had Elimelech, and he took his family from Israel into Moab. He went from the promised land into heathen land. That's what happened. Why was that? Because there was a famine. Instead of trusting the Lord, what did he do? He did what was expedient. I don't think that Elimelech was a spiritual man. He may have been a saved man, but he was certainly not a spiritual man. And so you've got Naomi, and now she is headed back to the country of Moab. And why is that? Because she had heard while she was in the country of Moab that the Lord had visited his people in giving them bread. Where was his people? His people were not in Moab. His people were back in Israel, and her hometown, she had heard that there was now bread in Bethlehem. So she says, I'm going to go back. I'll be with my people. And so therefore, she went out of the place where she was. So in other words, she's on the road from Moab back to Bethlehem. And her two daughters-in-law with her. That's important. They had made the choice to go with Naomi. People make the choice to say, I'm going to follow Jesus. But you'll notice something that happens. These two girls end up much different. And it says that they were the two daughters that were with her, and they were going to return unto the land of Judah at the end of verse 7. And then Naomi, I believe she has great intentions. I believe that she cares for her daughters-in-law. Now, I want you to notice what she says. Go return each to her mother's house. Have you ever thought about that little phrase there? That phrase is only used 3 times in the Bible. Return to your mother's house. Now, why is that? Because most of the time, you know what mothers are concerned about? They're concerned about their daughters finding a husband. That's what they want. Now, sometimes whenever you read in the Bible, you're going to the father's house. But here she says, I want you to return and go to your mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead, my boys, and with me. In other words, you have been respectful to me. And what I want you to do is I want you to go back to your mothers. You girls are young enough to get remarried. And so Naomi said unto the two daughters, the Lord grant you that you may find rest, each of you of the house of her husband. Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voice and wept. So the commitment was, we're going to go with you. Naomi says, no, don't do that. So could that be the test? The Lord will put things in our way to test whether we are truly committed. And you and I, we will have those tests the entire time that we try to walk with the Lord. Some of the old saints used to call it, you know, you got to persevere. When you read in the book of the Revelation, you'll read a phrase like this. It'll say, he that endures to the end shall be saved. That means that if you're genuine, you will have continued with us. You began with us. If you were truly born again, you would still be with us. In other words, that commitment is something that will sustain you even when pressures come to get you to quit. And so I want us to think about 3 things, and we're going to read some more in a minute. But I want you to remember the history that is remembered. Now, there are people that love the book of Ruth so much that some of them have said things like this: this is the greatest short love story of all time. And it's a good one. It's got a lot of good stuff in it. I mean, you've got tragedy, you've got hope, you've got a marriage, you've got sadness, you've got tears, and at the end, it closes with a happy ever after. Naomi, who went away bitter, she said, "Don't call me Naomi, call me Mara. Call me because I'm bitter." But now they say, the Lord has given Naomi a son. Well, it wasn't her son, it was a grandson. But it was through Ruth, and she had, just like a woman at a mama's house, Naomi had said, "Now this is what you do. I want that boy to notice you, so I want you to kind of fix yourself up a little bit, and I want you to go, and I want you to be around and let him see you kind of walking around the field." In those days, when the gleaners would glean, they were told in the Levitical law to put some grain around the edges of the field so that the poor and those that didn't have the strength to pick and to do the wheat and the other grains like barley, they would be able to pick up. You remember the phrase handfuls on purpose? That's where that comes from. In other words, they would just leave handfuls there. And Boaz noticed her, and he says to the guys, he said, "Hey, you see her over there? You leave some big piles so it's easy for her to get it." And the next thing you know, she's inside the room and she's sleeping at his feet, covering his feet up so his toes don't get cold. And then he's thinking, "I think I'm going to marry her." They get married, and the next thing you know, there's a baby that comes along. And it says about Naomi that she was happy. I preached about this one night. I called it Grandma Naomi. That was the message that I preached. And I thought it was funny because at the end of the service, Marge Wynn said, "Brother Tommy, William and I," she called her husband William, everybody else called him Bill, all right? But she said, "William and I had gone on a trip, and the keynote speaker at this conference that we had been sent to was Colin Powell, General Colin Powell. And said he was talking to us, and he closed with this about the greatness of being a grandparent. And she said, "You need to remember this." And I thought, okay, if I can, easy to remember. He closed by saying this: "I've seen the lights of Paris, and I've seen the lights of Rome, but I've never seen anything as glorious as the taillights of the grandkids going home." I thought about that this Christmas. I thought, we're eating at 3 o'clock, we're going to get our bellies full, and then we got to open presents, and I'm thinking, I got to get a nap. Because we'd done got up at 5 o'clock that morning, we had been giving Deborah stuff, and then all of a sudden we're doing Christmas with AJ, and then next thing you know, we got a house full of folks, and that's like, whew, being a grandparent is great, but it's tiring. And so Grandma Naomi, what does she do? She is now happy. Happy because she's got a grandson. I guarantee you that if Boaz and Ruth wanted to go on a date, they had a built-in babysitter. No doubt about it. And so we see that she wants what's best for these girls. She uses the term rest. She said, "I want you to have a husband." She gives them her love. I mean, she really does. Her boys cannot be there any longer. The Lord has taken them, but I want you girls to be happy. And so she insists on it. Look at verse 11. They said to her in verse 10 that we will return. In verse 11, "Turn again, my daughters. Why will ye go with me? Are there yet any more sons in my womb that they may be your husbands?" Now you remember the Levirate vows, the marriage vows, were that if there was a man that was married and he died, if he had a brother, he was to take his sister-in-law and marry her. If he died, then the next one were to take her. And so that's what Naomi's referring to here. is there any more sons in my womb? And said, I'm too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, if I should have a husband also tonight and should also bear sons. And so would you tarry for them till they were grown? In other words, girls, you got these boys, I mean, years and years. I mean, your fruitful years are slipping away. Will you really wait for them? And so they had said, hey, we're going to return with you to your people. But then something happens. True priorities are revealed. Look back with me at verse 9. Verse number 9, the Lord grant you that you may find rest. She kissed them, and they lifted up their voice, and they wept. And so she is wanting them to have security. Now, I don't think that Naomi is a spiritual lady. Just like Elimelech was not a spiritual man, I don't think that Naomi was a spiritual lady. She did not have the trust in the Lord that she should have. Sometimes when we're doing the will of God, the world would look at us and go, that don't make sense. But sometimes the Lord leads his people in ways that don't make sense to the world. The natural man doesn't receive the things of the Lord, whether it's in Ruth's time or our time. The Lord leads in mysterious ways his wonders to perform. What about Abraham? Abraham said, okay, I'll do whatever you want me to do, Lord. Where am I going? I'm not going to tell you that yet. Just head that way. And what did Abraham do? He did it. I'll give you another one. What about Rebecca? Now you think about this. Think about, ladies, you think about when you were young. Let's say that you're 16, 17 years old. You've never had a date. You want to get married one day. I mean, you're filling that hope chest up. You want to get married. And then all of a sudden, some guy comes from a distant place. And he looks at you and he says, would you like to marry my master's son? She doesn't say, what's he look like? She doesn't say, he got any money? You don't see any of those questions. The only thing that you see that was a test was not from Rebecca, it was from Abraham's most trusted servant. And this was the fleece. Lord, if she offers to water my camels, then I'm going to say, would you like to marry my master's son? And when she was asked that, you know what she said? Yeah, I'll do it. Her daddy said, you sure that's what you want to do? Yeah, I'll do it. I'll do it. So the next thing you know, off she goes. She never saw Isaac once until the time she got married to him. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, I don't know about that. I mean, it could be that there's a Laban somewhere in the mix, you know, putting somebody else off on you. But I'm just telling you that sometimes the ways of the Lord are different. She's just simply following logic. I mean, I'm young. I'm in the land of the Moabites. My mother-in-law, who I love, wants me to go back. Okay. All right. So that's what I'll do. And so she made the choice. And can I tell you that choices always have to be made? They don't always come in huge packages. Sometimes they're just little small choices. But if you make enough small decisions, pretty soon you've landed at a big place. That's one of the things that I try to get across to people. We have had people that we have tried to help through our benevolence at this church. And sometimes they just come back and come back and come back and come back. And it's like, do you ever learn? Do you ever learn. I want you to think about this. If you go to a national park, and I probably shouldn't even say this, but I'm going to. You go to a national park, what do they tell you not to do? Don't you feed them animals. Why? Because it will cause them to begin to trust in man to feed them, and they will forget how to forage and hunt for themselves. So you're doing the animals a disservice. Now, we have more governmental departments, and what do they say? Let's take him from a cradle to the grave. Let's just give him checks. And what do? We feed them, and we feed them so that they can't forage and hunt for themselves. We don't teach them to fish. We give them fish, and then more fish, and then more fish, and then more fish. And so we have decisions to make. Orpha had to make those decisions. I'll give you a third thing. My time is just gone. Her old life is now returned. Look at verse 15. And she said, "Behold, thy sister-in-law is gone back unto her people." Now, who is her people? The Moabites. Now, the Moabites are the people that descended from an incestuous relationship that Lot, Abraham's nephew, had with his two daughters. The Moabites were the older, or from the older girl. The Ammonites are from the younger girl. These girls had evidently learned their morals from the city of Sodom. They got their father drunk, and they had an incestuous relationship with their dad. They got pregnant, and the Moabites and the Ammonites came from that, and they began to expand and multiply, and that's who we're talking about, those people from the first daughter. And so that's who she has gone back to. But it also says, and unto her gods. In other words, she didn't go back as a missionary. She went back to the gods of Moab. The chief god, the chief pagan god of the Moabites was Chemosh. Spelled Chemosh. This was kind of a fish-like god. And they would have the temples there. And you know one of the sad things? When Solomon would become king a few hundred years in the future, when he would become king, he would build a temple to Chemosh because he had pagan wives and that was their religion. And he was trying to placate those pagan women. Solomon, the smartest man ever, he did that. And so she goes back to her old life. How many of us have known people? They make a profession of faith. They come from a life of sin, but they're much like the story in the Gospels where that a demon was cast out, and for a time the life was clean, but then the demon came back and brought seven more with him, and the man's life at the end was worse than it was at the beginning. I think that's what we probably see here with Orpha. And so her old life has returned. Now, I think that there's a contrast between these two gals. Loyalty and selfishness. I think that Ruth, who is the heroine in this story, I think that Ruth was loyalty and she loved Naomi with everything that she had. I want you to look with me at verse get my glasses on so I can see better. Yeah, look at verse 16. Entreat me not to leave thee or to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go, and where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God shall be my God. Where thou diest, will I die, and there will I be buried. And the Lord do so to me, and more so also, if aught but death part thee and me. And so Naomi sees that she's steadfast, and so she says, all right, let's go. She's not gonna waver. People that truly know Christ, they don't waver. They may fall, but a righteous man falls and gets up seven times. You just keep getting up, and you keep getting up, and you keep going in the direction that you're trying to go. So how do they really know if they're born again? Now, I don't have any doubt that everybody that's here tonight, this is church people here tonight. But on Sunday morning, I have some questions. And when I look at that church roll, I have a lot of questions. But I want you to go back with me to 1 John, and we're just going to just read some verses. I want you to go, first of all, to 1 John chapter 2, and we're going to read 3 through 5. These are things that are basically fruits that are in the life of a person that is truly born again. And hereby, we do know that we know him if we keep his commandments. He that saith, I know him and keepeth not his commandments is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But whoso keepeth his word, in him verily or truly is the love of God perfected or made complete. Hereby know we that we are in him. So in other words, are we trying to follow the commands of the Lord? If we don't care about following the commands of the Lord, verse 4 said we're liars. Go to chapter 3, verse 9. Whosoever is born of God doth not commit sin. The word commit there means to practice. In other words, we don't just practice sin. For his seed remaineth in him, you're born again, and he cannot sin continually because he is born of God. So in other words, if you sin and sin and sin and sin and sin and sin and sin, and there's nothing that's ever corrected, are you born again? Look at verse 14 of chapter 3. We know that we have passed from death unto life because we love the brethren. He that loveth not his brother abideth in death. Well, I'm telling you right now, I just don't care about being around them church people. That's a problem. Not for them, for you. If you don't like being at church, you got an issue with verse 14. If you don't like hanging out with Christians, you like hanging out with the world and what the world does instead of God's people, you need to do some real checking. Look at chapter 3, verse 24. This whole book of 1 John talks about how you know the Lord. Verse 24, and he that keepeth his commandments dwelleth in him, and he in him. In other words, we dwelleth in Christ, and Christ in us. And hereby we know that he abideth in us by the Spirit which he hath given us. Do you have the Spirit of God that talks to you and says, no, no, y'all not do that. That's wrong. You say, I don't have any voices talking to me. Well, I'm not talking about the voices in your head. I'm talking about the Spirit of God in your soul. If the Spirit of God is not speaking to you about doing right, then is he there? look at chapter 5, verses 1 through 5. Whosoever believeth that Jesus is the Christ is born of God. And everyone that loveth him that begatteth, or that begat, loveth him also that is begotten of him. And by this we know that we love the children of God when we love God and keep his commandments. For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments. And his commandments are not grievous. It doesn't bother me when the Lord tells me to do something. I wish God wouldn't have said that. I wished he wouldn't have told me to do that. After all, I got buddies that don't do that. Why is he telling me to do that? And we want to complain about it. They aren't grievous. For whatsoever is born of God overcometh the world, and this is the victory that overcometh the world, even our faith. Who is he that overcometh the world but he that believeth that Jesus is the Son of God? Look at verse 18 of this chapter and we'll be done. We know that whosoever is born of God sinneth not, doesn't practice sin, but he that is begotten of God keepeth himself, and that wicked one toucheth him not. The devil doesn't have his fingerprints all over you. You're a child of God. You're different. The devil doesn't say, hey, that's one of mine going right there. So, millions believe in God, but there's few that obey God. There's a lot of people that's, oh, I believe in Jesus. But the devils believe and tremble. And when we have people and they go, oh, I'm a Christian, they never touch a Bible. They never utter a prayer. They never darken the doors of a church service anywhere. They never care about other Christians. All of those things are markers. It's as though they have said, yeah, we'll go with Jesus. But then, just as Orpha did, they turned, kissed him, but never followed him. The greatest kiss of evil that was ever perpetrated was in the Garden of Gethsemane, the kiss of Judas. It was a kiss of betrayal. And you and I, we need to make sure that we don't just kiss the Son, but that we obey the Son. Her kiss, I'm sure she meant it, but the ability to follow through on a decision long after the emotion in which you made it has died is a fruit that you're on the right path. When I look at some of you, you have been in the way for decades. You have followed the Lord. Can I tell you that is a great fruit? That is a great fruit. You know why? Because you continued with us. When I say us, I'm not talking about Corinth Baptist Church. I'm talking about the Christian people in general. We're not the only church out here, okay? I think we're the best one, but other people would think that, and if they don't think that, they ought to think that if it's their church. They went out from us, but they were not of us. Had they been with us, they would have continued with us. People that do not follow Jesus most likely don't know Jesus. Let's prove that we know him by the way that we live.